Are you interested in applying to top law schools, perhaps med schools, or perhaps you want to pursue a Master's of Fine Arts? Have we got the guest for you? Hello and welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and shout, yes, I'm in. And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Today's guest, Jessica Pishko, works with many of Accepted's law school applicants, but she has incredibly rich and diverse experience helping applicants gain acceptance to a wide variety of degree programs. Now, after earning her own bachelor's in English and French at Rice University, Jessica attended Harvard Law School, worked in corporate law, and then in legal search. However, Jessica then decided to refocus her career and entered Columbia's MFA program. While studying at Columbia, she taught writing, worked in the Writing Center, and assisted with law, business, and medical school application essays. She deepened her knowledge of the medical school application process when she became a writing advisor at Columbia University's post-bac program, and while working one-on-one with these students, helped them through the primary and secondary essays required of medical school applicants. Jessica, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Hey, thank you, Linda.
I should add that Jessica, that's what Jessica did in the past. There's one thing I forgot to add was that she's currently a consultant with Accepted. So we're proud to have her in that capacity, and it's great to have you on the show now. Now, let's talk for a moment about law school admissions. Let's actually just start with law school admissions. GPA, LSAT, maybe a relevant internship experience or job, and then a personal statement. Which do you think is the most important element in the JD application process and why?
That's always a tough question to answer because I think it does differ between schools to some extent. You know, law school is still, a lot of law school is still kind of a numbers game. So GPA and LSAT are undoubtedly very important to law schools. I would say that probably the personal statement is the next thing to focus on. I think one thing that's unique about law school is that their admissions are very concerned about people who can write and express themselves because it is a job that requires advocacy, written and oral expression. So to some extent, the personal statement's not just about you and who you are, but it's also an example of how you present yourself, how you write, what you think about. So sort of serves a purpose beyond just sort of talking about you and your experiences. I would say in terms of internships, experiences, and jobs, again, this may depend on what kind of program you're entering. Certainly if you're doing more specialty programs, so let's say you're interested in patent law, they're going to look for someone with a rich scientific background. But for some law schools, that job or internship may be less important if you're able to articulate really good reasons why you're interested in studying law. I would say that, again, depends on where you're going to school and what you're hoping to focus on.
Probably also a bit on your background itself, too.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Now, several years ago, and I was trying to figure out exactly when, and it's almost 20 years ago, I attended a conference of pre-law advisors. And while I was there, one of the dean of one of the local law schools addressed the room, and he was railing against the concept that law school admissions is a numbers game and that it really is much more than that, and the personal statement counts and the experiences count, and there should not be such a focus on GPA and LSAT, and really isn't so. It's not really what counts. And I sat there in the audience, and I was relatively new at this at the time. And I thought, gee, that's great. I'm very impressed with his presentation and the kind of the sentiments he was expressing. And then afterwards, there were several other sessions where the admissions committee most of them were directors, pre-law directors, and advisors were talking. And all they talked about was the LSAT and the GPA. Huh. And the contrast was so striking to me. Has anything changed? Is law school admission still very much focused on the stats?
I think that no program wants to say that they're focused on stats.
Right.
Because it doesn't sound very good, right? It sounds like you might exclude people who otherwise are great for their program. And to some extent, I think that's true. I mean, I think, with respect to LSAT and GPA, depending on, again, where you're hoping to go to school, if you're within a certain range, you're a good applicant. But on the flip side, there's a certain range, and I do think it's very hard for people who fall very far outside that range. I don't know that law schools will go very, far beyond the range. At the same time, I do think that oftentimes what schools do is weigh LSAT and GPA. So let's say you have a very good GPA, but an okay LSAT, that's good for you. If you have an okay GPA, but a very good LSAT, that will also help you. So I think it's pretty hard to say that the numbers have nothing to do with it. My personal story is actually that I did not do that great on the LSAT. That was my personal story. I took the LSAT, I got really sick. I did okay, but not, as super as I had hoped to do. I was at the bottom end of the range. So for Harvard, I was definitely at the bottom end of the range for LSAT scores. And,
you must have had other strengths.
I kind of just took it in stride and readjusted where I applied. To be honest with you, I just thought, okay, well, let me shift these schools I'm applying to. I think it had an effect on some schools, but it didn't. But I will say that my GPA was very, very high. So I didn't have, it wasn't, I had a situation where I do think that, they saw my GPA, they saw my LSAT score and thought, this person did very well in undergrad. So, maybe that has something to do with it.
Sister had actually the opposite kind of experience. She certainly had a very good GPA in college, but she absolutely aced the LSAT. She just has that kind of mind. She did very, very well on all standardized tests. And even though our grades, both in high school and college, were very close, her standardized test scores were just stellar. Her mind were okay. They were fine. It was, nothing to write home about, nothing to remember. And I don't remember them, but hers I remember because they're real easy to remember. So it was different. And she did go to Harvard Law.
Yeah. I mean, the LSAT, it's a hard test. I tell applicants, the LSAT has to be studied for. You can't just walk into the LSAT. It's just not that kind of test.
Yeah. Well, when we were taking the test, the common wisdom was that you can't study for them. That was what was believed at the time. And I think what she did is she got some, just a prep book and went through it, if I remember correctly. But obviously it was a long time ago. Now, one thing I think you hit on, which is really, really important in the law school admissions process, is once you're in that acceptable range in terms of your GPA and LSAT, okay, which is obviously where most applicants are going to fall at most programs, statistically. What's going to differentiate those who get in from those who don't get in?
I think there's a little bit of magic in many things, right? So sometimes it just happens to be who you are and where you're from, what you're interested in, what your background is, and are you a match for that school and their class, right? So, to that end, law school, if you're looking at the top 10 law school chooses, you should just apply to all of them if you want to go to a top 10 law school, because it's kind of hard at that stage to, really differentiate, who's going to get in where. I mean, Yale and Stanford are very small. That's going to make a big difference.
Sure.
So that's just class size in and of itself makes a big difference in where you might get in. I think that one thing they kind of look for are differing perspectives. This is something I think that people think that I mean, I find that people say, I think because you envision this admissions committee as sort of this, like, faceless person who wants something really specific from you. They want you to say that you're going to be a politician or you're going to be, you know, Alan Dershowitz. But the truth is that, you know, that's some ideal lawyer. But the truth is that I think actually they want people who are kind of coming to law for different reasons that may be unique. So, you know, not everyone comes from a business perspective. Not everyone comes from an English major perspective. Some people come from an international perspective. So I think that the admissions people really want to know why you're coming to law and what brings you there, whether it's a more academic interest, whether it's more advocacy, and whether it's more business, international work, policy work. I think they just want to know, like, well, what brings you to law? How is it different than the person who is also coming to law? Rather than thinking that, like, everyone in law school is supposed to be sort of the same.
When I was trying to decide my own professional path, I considered law. And when I started Accepted, I also heard the following phrase a lot, which I heard when I was, again, trying to choose my own professional path. And that is, law is a good foundation. They wouldn't say what it's a foundation for, but it's a good foundation. And what, I mean, how would you respond to somebody who says it's a good foundation for a career?
I think that's a tough one. You know, I heard that too. Like, it's a good foundation. And at one point I had this book that was called something like 50 Things You Can Do with a Law Degree Other Than Be a Lawyer, right? So there was sort of this.
There was some book like that. I remember that. Yeah.
I was like, boom, a book you could buy that were like, oh, if you go to law school, you could do all these things. And I think the idea is like retool your skill set. You know, the truth is when I talk to people, it's just applying for law school. It was funny because someone gave me this advice and then I sort of was like, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. And now I think really more than ever, it's kind of true, just given the burden of debt and, you know, what it is to go through grad school. It's simply, you know, I would say go to law school if you think you want to practice law, you know, in some way, shape or form. You know, if you're really not sure if you want to practice law, I don't know that right now law school is great because, you know, law school is 3 years. It's still, most programs are 3 years long.
Right.
It's pretty expensive. And it's pretty specific. I do think, you know, it's not to say that I don't think law school is great training. So, yeah, sometimes people say it's great training for your mind or you'll learn certain things, but I, you know,
Sudoku is a lot cheaper.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I just think like now, I mean, now I feel like the sort of similar go-to is something like getting an MBA. Like I would feel like the skill set people are sort of moving towards is something like a business skill set as opposed to a law skill set, which is, I think, kind of interesting. But I mean, I just, and this is just in terms of, like I said, it's an expensive degree, and you want to make sure that when you get out of law school, if you don't have it paid for, that you're able to get a job. You know, the reality for most places is that you kind of have to look at their employment statistics. And I tell people who look at or looking at where they're accepted to spend time talking to career services and getting involved in that aspect, because that's ultimately what's going to be really important as you go through law school is, you know, how helpful will your school be in helping you get a job? That's a large part of what you're paying for. So, I mean, I guess I sort of, you know, maybe I quibble with that a little bit. It's not, of course, I say that being a person who, like, uses my law degree for non-law things. So I guess that's a, you know, I guess you have to take what I say with a grain of salt because I do that thing where I use the law degree for not law stuff.
Right. But, I mean, I think part of the fallacy of that logic, and I do believe it's false, is that it was okay when I was, I'm really going to date myself and age myself here, when I was going to graduate school or finishing up college and trying to decide my career path, which again, I decided against law, to say that law was was a good foundation for something. It was also a fairly inexpensive foundation. I could go to UCLA at the time, and I could have attended graduate school for just about the same cost per year as I would have spent on 3 months' rent. So
yeah, I mean, it's so different now.
Exactly. I mean, not in Los Angeles, but in many parts of the country or in the Bay Area, you can buy a house for what your law degree is going to cost you, or a condo. So, you know, you're not talking about 3 months' rent per year anymore. And I think that makes a decision process much more serious and consequential. So, you know, again, if you look back or when I started Accepted 20 years ago, already tuition had gone up. I don't know what the equivalency was then. If you went to law school and it didn't work out and you ended up doing one of those 50 other things, well, okay. So, you know, it wasn't horrible, but now you're talking about $150,000 either out of pocket or of debt. And I think that's a much more consequential investment.
The truth is the financial side is just, and that's just something everyone kind of has to be aware of, that, right. You know, you do have to pay the loans back.
Yeah.
I found, sadly.
Right.
And actually, even when I went to law school, it's actually, this segues into like something like the MFA, like sort of to believe it or not, like how much rent's gone up to, but how much like tuition's gone up is that one year of my MFA program basically cost me kind of the same as 3 years of law school.
All right. That's a good example. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like an 8 year difference. So, it's a big difference in money.
Oh yeah.
So
major.
I think that unfortunately, you know, it's just that's the way it is now. And I think, you know, the economy for law is a little bit different now. You know, mm-hmm. people have to be a little more aware of what they're getting into. The economy generally is different now. You know, people are just looking for different things when you look for jobs. Granted, I live in the Bay Area, so it's like all about tech.
Right.
It's a little different. It's just a little different. And I think, not to say that law school isn't a great thing, but I do think you should go if you want to practice law.
Exactly.
Or if law interests you, you should go to law school. If you're not sure, then I think you should think about it a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree with you 100%. Now, for those people who do want to practice law and do want to go to law school, is there some element or some aspect, I shouldn't say element because we kind of discussed elements, some aspect of the process that you think is either, let's go this way, that you think is underrated, that you think applicants don't take seriously enough?
I think now the sort of up-and-coming thing is the optional diversity statement that law schools are including. So most law schools, I would say almost all of them, I'm not totally sure. Majority of law schools now have something that they call the optional diversity statement. Back in the day when I applied, many people didn't do the diversity statement. It's optional. We would leave it blank. I now encourage applicants not to leave it blank. I think that now, not to say that what you write, you know, it should be good. Better to write nothing than write something bad. But that the diversity statement is sort of an increasingly important part of the application. People are using it to talk about various experiences they've had that will enhance them as a student and as a part of the school. And so I think that because it's optional, so people's instinct is still to not write it. I actually think that's a little... I think that's something you should not do. I do think you should write it, and I think you should think about what's in it and how it will fit in with your personal statement.
How it will complement the personal statement.
Exactly, right, because you also don't want to repeat material.
But what if you feel you had a pretty, Wonder Bread kind of upbringing? Stable.
Normal,
normal.
Stable, happy home.
Yeah, I mean, you're lucky, you're blessed. What do you do then?
I see people do, you know, believe it or not, I've seen creative things. One of the best diversity statements I saw was someone who wrote about rowing crew. So
really?
This is like someone who had not undergone, right? It was not, like, maybe their, I don't know if their home was happy or not, but let's say it was. They wrote a pretty good diversity statement about rowing crew. Now, the two things about, like, my caveats are one, that it wasn't really long. So the diversity statement shouldn't be more than, like, a page double spaced. It should be short. And it was very good. So,
yeah.
I mean, I will say that if you write something very good, it will trump a lot of, you know, I would not tell someone, go write a diversity statement about crew. That's not good general advice, but it was a really good diversity statement. I think it worked.
Yeah.
So I've seen those things. I've seen them work. I also think sometimes people underestimate their own diversity. If that sounds funny, like I think they don't.
Their own individuality.
Yeah, I think they assume because they grew up in a two-parent house and they had a, you know, whatever, they had a sort of nuclear family situation that this means that there's no, they're the same as everyone else. Whereas I don't know that I think that's true. And I don't know. I think that people, they do, they underestimate what their value is and how different they are from other people.
Right.
And that's the thing that I think law schools, that's the thing I think people under, you know, they sort of don't think as much about, but they want people who are different. You know, another thing is geographical diversity. I do think law schools try really hard. You know, Harvard Law School or Yale Law School can't have everybody who went to Harvard, Yale, Princeton. They don't. They look for people from other parts of the country, public school, private school, small school, big school, you know, small town,
rural,
big town.
Urban.
I mean, they're looking for people from kind of all over. And I also tell people to think geographically outside of where they live. So as a someone who grew up, you know, in the South, to think about law schools, you know, in the Midwest or Northeast, because there you're going to bring some geographical diversity as opposed to schools in your area. I think that that's something worth thinking about.
Right. That makes sense. That makes sense. What's your advice for, and we've talked about the diversity statement a bit, we've touched on the personal statement, but what's your advice for somebody sitting down to write the law school personal statement? How would you suggest they approach the process?
I think that one thing about the personal statement is that I think that people, well, this is, okay, so first of all, I'll caveat by saying, like, what I see is I see, like, this sort of goes to the idea that an admissions committee is some sort of nameless, faceless thing,
yeah,
that
robotic,
wants,
robotic.
You know, yeah, they want the next Supreme Court justice, you know, or whatever. And so you have to present yourself as, like, totally dedicated to the law, or you know, something like that. Whereas I feel like if you sit down and write your personal statement, I do think what people are looking for is some kind of, like, genuineness. You know, are you a person? Are you a person underneath your GPA and LSAT? What really brings you to law? What do you really like? And, you know, if sometimes people write personal statements about, like, watching law TV shows, which is also something I never recommend doing, like, oh, I used to watch Matt Law, or I used to watch.
In my day, it was Perry Mason, but it's okay.
Perry Mason, you know.
That was even old when I was doing it.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. So, you know, be like, oh, I like LA Law, and I always like LA Law, so people probably don't know what LA Law is now either. But, you know, and that's like, oh, I watched it on TV, so now I want to do it. Something I discourage people from doing, by the way, don't say you want to be like a TV lawyer, but it's like, what actually brings you, like, do you like working with people? But maybe you're not as interested in working with people and you're actually interested in it from a more, like, theoretical standpoint or a more political standpoint or a more moral and philosophical standpoint. But, you know, I think some people just have to think, like, what actually brings them to law? What's their sort of unique way of approaching it? Rather, I think that they do that, like, they saw a trial lawyer and this is what trial lawyers do. You know, kind of as a part of that is also because, like, the newsflash is really not like it is on TV, even if you're a trial lawyer. So it's actually not like TV. So, you know, it's probably more valuable to talk about, you know, what you're really interested in, what really brings you to law. I also think that, you know, law is at its heart it's a service profession.
Of course.
That's what law is. Law is a service profession. Law is about other people come to you with their problems and you try to help them. That's what it is. So, you know, to think and you're writing your personal statement, I use the word advocacy a lot. So I say something like, well, law is about you helping someone get what they want or what you think they deserve, right? Mm-hmm. So how are you going to advocate for that person? How are you going to relate to people who want, you know, you have to help them get things they want and maybe it will work out and maybe it won't. So how are you going to navigate it? So I guess there I'm saying to think in your personal statement about how you connect with people, how you work with people one-on-one. So law is also sort of, right, you'll generally work with people one-on-one more closely, you know, than you might otherwise. Maybe if you're doing policy work, you might not, but you're still sort of dealing with individual legislators or something. So I think that is worthwhile to think about too.
Right. One of the best law school personal statements I ever read, and again, this goes back a couple of decades, but I still remember it because in my mind it was very memorable. It was an applicant who wrote about the interpretive qualities of a specific genre of music. And he loved this kind of music, and he wrote about his appreciation of this music and, again, its interpretive qualities, and barely mentioned law. But it was so applicable to law and so reflective of him. I mean, I don't think they called it a diversity essay back then. I think they called it an addendum or optional or something like that. But it was fantastic because in addition to his personal statement, which was much more professional and talked about what he'd been doing, he was a non-traditional applicant. And then you had this one, which was, you know, he actually was told later that it was like passed around the office and stuff like that because it was just that good.
And yeah, I think it's great. That's what the diversity statement should be for.
Yeah, really.
Another really good one I saw was,
No, go ahead.
I was thinking another really great one I saw along those lines is someone who had a diversity statement, again, short and not about law. It was about someone who had, and I can't remember exactly what sort of learning impediment they had, but they had to learn something in a particular way, and it was about how they matched. It was similarly process-oriented. It was about, like, how they would learn words by matching it to music. And so it was this highly specific logic about how this person kind of, not only was it sort of overcoming a problem, which is always a good, great thing to show, but it was also just the way this person had thought about and could verbalize, which is sort of the hardest part. Exactly what they did and why it worked and why it was so important. And so in a way, it was just kind of like, it's one thing to write a diversity statement that's like, oh, I'm different because I learn in a different way. But it was another thing to really see that this was like, you know, just like a world, like probably similar to the music, just like a world that a reader might not have as much access to. And so you could just see how that person thought, which I also think is really vital for law school. It's a lot about how you think.
Sure.
Did I tell you, I got a compliment on my personal statement. So I wrote on my acceptance letter, like, good personal statement.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if they passed around. But I wrote a little note. I got a little note at the bottom of, like, one or two of my letters.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
I don't remember writing that much about law either. I was writing about history. I was like, I don't remember. I don't know. It was like this musing about history. And it was not about like an internship because I did do an internship and it was horrible. So I specifically didn't write about it. But like, I did that thing where they're like, do this internship. And I did it. It was just like the worst experience ever. So like, I can't write about that.
I remember working with a law school, and then we're going to move on to discuss other things. But the applicant wrote, he and I don't remember which of the national parties, but he was working at for one of the national parties, the Democrats or Republicans. He was working in their headquarters, and I think it was the summer before an election year. So, you know, it's a plum internship. And he wrote that it was interesting and challenging. And I remember I called the guy up and I said, look, I knew it was interesting and challenging and I wasn't even there. Can you tell me something I didn't know? So he was, well, he says, I absolutely hated it. I said, why did you hate it? You know, and it was just like his big experience. And I said, well, why did you hate it? And he then went into why it was a very disillusioning kind of experience. And I said, well, you know, obviously you don't want to be terribly negative in your personal statement. I said, but I think it would be far more interesting for you to write about how the experience influenced you than just it was challenging and interesting, which says absolutely nothing. And he did. And he got in. He was very happy in the end. But I think, again, you don't want to be negative and just trashing something. But there is a way to say that an experience steered you in a particular direction, even if it wasn't the one you intended at the beginning. And that can be far more interesting than some kind of generic blather. Now, let's turn a little bit away from law school. I still have one question on law school, then we're going to turn to some of your other specialties. A recent Kaplan survey of law school admissions officers had 88% predicting an upturn in application volume after the enormous decline that has taken place since the 2008 Great Recession and financial whatever crash. At this point in time, do you agree with that there's going to be an uptick, or do you think it's going to change admissions? Or how have you seen admissions change because of the financial meltdown?
I mean, I would say the change comes in two different varieties. One change I did see, just practically speaking, was that some law schools are taking applicants very late in the process.
Right.
So people were applying in like the spring, and some law schools were still taking people. Now, mm-hmm. that did not really change any of the top, I would say, top 15, top 20 law schools. No, that was not it. Other law schools, yes. Now, the flip side of that is I think that what people are going to do is really look at schools and their career, what are the results? What percent of people are getting law jobs? Just be a little careful on this. Like law-related jobs after law school, because I think some schools were counting working at Starbucks as a job after law school, right? So you know, you have to be a non-paying job after law school, right? So I think that people are getting more specific about statistics, like how many people are working and what are they doing. And as I said, I also now counsel people before, like if they're deciding between schools, I say go to the career services,
right?
Think about, or if you want to do public interest law, talk to their public interest law department or, you know, facilitator. What do they have? Where are their people going? Because actually that's the thing that now I think people really want to know. So I do think it's going to change the law school market a little. I haven't seen a profound change. The law market is still going up and down.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for me to say, you know, I don't know if anyone could say with any reliability, this will happen. It could be, you know, if business does not do well, applications to law school do tend to go up. Litigators and lawyers are busy when business people are not busy. That tends to be the, you know, sort of common knowledge. But it's hard to tell. I do think people are just going to look for specific things. But I would tell people, you know, pay a little attention to that kind of stuff.
Right. No, I completely agree on that one. Okay, let's turn to a couple of your other specialties. When helping clients with their medical school primary application, how do you recommend they approach this personal statement versus the experiences versus the most meaningful experiences? I mean, how do you recommend they decide what to put where? Or is it possible to give some kind of generic advice on that?
I think a few things. I mean, one thing that's important is to think about your application as a whole. Mm-hmm. So one way to look at it all is balance. If you are very research heavy person, sometimes it can work well to have a personal statement that is more about working with people. And then I would say use other things for your most meaningful experiences. So right, you want to always minimize overlap. I tell people if an experience doesn't make it into their personal statement, you should make it a most meaningful experience, right? Because you want to kind of minimize that overlap. So one way that you can think about it is to sort of like compliment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they encourage. Like I said, this is for people who are like really, really, you know, let's say a really good grade, you're really research focused, but maybe your like personality might be less clear for your application. So you might want to write a personal statement that's more about working with people and showing a different side of your personality. My preference for personal statements is that they feel really coherent and tell a kind of clear story. And by clear story, I don't totally mean like a sort of birth to med school story. Like I don't necessarily mean like an autobiography, but I mean it sort of makes a coherent point that the reader can really get. You know? So the reader will read it and see, okay, this had a profound experience. This person's really interested in this thing. This is what they're like. Whereas I feel like most meaningful experiences, you can sort of pinpoint an experience and explain why it had an impact on you, but you're less concerned sort of about it's not a whole, you know, it doesn't maybe, does it fit as well into your whole story? But again, there's some art in the crafting, right? You get to decide how you want to shape that story, which is a great advantage when you think about it. In a personal statement, I tell people something like, they're telling you you can write about anything, anything about you you ever want to write about. So you don't want them to think, oh, they can write about anything, and this is what they wrote about, right?
Right.
You think, you get to pick. You get to pick. So pick the thing, you know, pick what you really want to write about in your personal statement. You know, some caveats, of course. But I think that that's what you want to see is sort of the more, like I said, a theme, a more coherent theme. But that's generally my preference because I just don't think you can cover that much little stuff in a personal statement. It doesn't read well. It's hard to remember. You get lost in detail. And it just doesn't feel like a person. It feels like a resume.
Right. I could. Yeah, you end up having a resume in prose, which is really pretty boring.
Yeah, that and the autobiography in prose. It's like the I was born, I went to school, I did a job, then I went to undergrad. So it's like a little like it's like step by step, like how you know that's sort of also unnecessary. Like you know, again, childhood. Unless something really impactful happened in childhood, it's like a little you know.
Right,
I
always
just have a story. It's like my parents gave me the Fisher Price doctor's kit.
No, you don't want that. You don't want that.
Yeah, you know, that's a great story.
Right. How do secondary essays differ from the personal statement and the primary application for medical school applicants?
I think secondary essays, I actually think having worked with people at secondary essays, there's sort of this like great untapped opportunity. I like to always put essays in terms of like really positive things. Like the essay is a great opportunity, right? You get to show something. Because secondary essays are about fit. And they're often more specific. So they tend to have more specific questions and they're more about fit with the school.
Absolutely.
So that's a great opportunity because you now get to sort of, pull out all your tools and show how you're such a great fit for the school. And again, you get to choose the tools you want to use. So you can sort of pick the parts of your life that sort of fit and you can, you know, answer these questions, which I think sometimes are, you know, give you an idea of what the school is looking for, you know, what kind of people are they looking for. So I'm actually kind of like a fan of secondary essays. I think the instinct is people are really burnt out and just want to kind of, you know, like blow them off and say, okay, whatever, I'm just going to write, you know, just going to write something and get it over with. And it is really overwhelming in the process. To be fair. It's so hard to do the whole answer.
So long. It's a long process.
And then you get like buckets of secondaries that you're now supposed to, you know, energize yourself to answer. And that's really hard. on the flip side of the school, if someone acts with this energy to their secondaries, they think, oh, this person really wants to go to this school. You know, look at how they tried to write a nice secondary. So I think that it's a good way to kind of, like, stand out from the pack, because a lot of people will be burnt out and they'll write, you know, their B, you know, B and C level essays.
That's true. That should be very motivating for anybody still writing secondaries now, or listening to this later, that just the act of really being present will make an enormous difference. And writing your A essays as opposed to your C or D.
I mean, I think if the vision committee see, like, okay, this person wrote a good essay, and this person, well, they seem like they just wrote it in an hour and sent it. I mean, you can tell.
Oh, yeah. I also agree with you that the secondary essays are all about fit with the specific schools. That's for sure. Now, based on your personal experience as well as your work at Columbia, what do you think is important if somebody wants to pursue a Master's of Fine Arts, which is your third area of expertise?
Third area. The one.
I shouldn't say the third. I should say a third, but go ahead.
Definitely an area where one wants to be particularly cautious about loans, right? So MFA, you know, be all the word about loans. The two things I tell people who want to look at MFAs, one, look at programs, how much they cost, and which ones you can get really nice teaching fellowships, right?
It's
honestly, the less you pay for your MFA, the better.
Right.
Two, look at schools that are not in expensive places like New York or LA. Like, that's so true. Like, go in a system center with the Columbia, which, if you look at
very expensive.
One of the more expensive ones. And I was very lucky to get a teaching fellowship. So, you know, but without that teaching fellowship, many of my classmates, it was a lot of money and a lot of jokes. And a lot of the great schools are free. If you get in, you teach and work, and it's free, and that's great. Like, University of Texas, UVA, Iowa is free for many people, so, good schools. In terms of your application, the thing about the MFA is the most important thing is your writing sample. I think there is usually a personal statement. The key thing about the personal statement, I would say, is they're looking for people who are going to be pleasant to work with, right? Like, that's... Mm-hmm. They're trying to weed out people who sort of write a personal statement, you know, I'm a great writer, and I want to bring my greatness to the world, right? They're looking for someone who applications veer in that way, right? They're looking for people who are nice people, will sit in a room with people and be, you know, willing contributors. At the end of the day, the writing sample is the most important part, because that's sort of how you show... it's how you show your skills, so sort of similar to MCAT or LSAT or something.
Right. Okay, great. Don't you have a novel that you came out with recently?
I do. I have a very short novel.
Okay.
It's Trial for Grace. It's based on an experience I had as a lawyer.
What's the name again?
A Trial for Grace.
A Trial for Grace, okay.
And it's, based on experience I had as a lawyer. So it's one of the 50 things you can do with a law degree is write a book. I have 49 to go or something. And they're turning it's available on Amazon. Actually, they're turning it into an Audible book. You can now, you'll be able to listen to it soon.
Wow.
Exciting. And I've been doing a lot of writing. I have to do a lot of nonfiction writing. I just started writing for Rolling Stone, which is very exciting.
Woo.
A lot of fun.
That's great.
So you can check that stuff out too.
What kinds of articles or what kinds of pieces are you writing for Rolling Stone?
I just wrote a piece about prison guards.
So also law related. So you are using your law degree.
So I write about law quite a lot. So that's my other use of a law degree. One of the lawyers who now write. So I do write a lot about law, a lot about criminal justice.
And now, Trial for Grace is fiction or nonfiction?
That's fiction.
And the articles you're doing for Rolling Stones, those are?
Those are nonfiction. Those are nonfiction. So they're, I'm looking into, right now I'm working on a piece about sort of wrongfully convicted, these two wrongfully convicted guys.
Oh, okay.
In L.A. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's interesting, too. I think that's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Only I think these things are a lot of fun, I guess.
Well, they're probably fun to write about and explore, but not very much fun for the participants, the people, central characters.
It is not fun to experience, though.
No.
It's interesting to write about.
Right. Jessica, I really want to thank you for a highly informative and fascinating conversation, but I regretfully need to bring the show to a close. I'm going to link to your bio on Accepted so our listeners can learn more about you and also request your services and help with their applications. I think you've revealed a lot of insight here, and that insight can help individuals applying either law school or medical school or an MFA if they want to access that expertise. We'll include a link in the show notes at info.accept.com/127 to Jessica's bio, to her novel, and even to the Rolling Stones articles. Listener, thank you too for joining Jessica Pishko for episode and me for episode 127. Please subscribe to Admission Straight Talk. We'd love to have you as a regular, and that way you make sure you don't miss any episodes. We've had some great episodes in the past. We had Schwartzman Scholars admissions director on. We've had head of Venture for America. We've had admissions directors. We've had alumni of impressive programs doing all kinds of interesting things, and we'd love to have you as a regular subscriber. So again, you can do so at info.accept.com/127. Just look for the subscribe link, and you can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/127 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.